You know what? They had, so the Chinese had brainwashed them, the cities, Fu Manchu, which turned out to be nothing more than isolation, deprivation, alienation, what this guy was talking about. Very standard stuff. You know, nothing romantic about it. Just the same old, take a person, put their hand in a vice, close the vice, say talk. They'll talk, you know, at some point. Something on that level. And that's what brainwashing was. Isolation, deprivation. It's like our prison, like our educational system, like our prison system, you know. Simple things. The Chinese didn't use drugs or anything sophisticated. But they did get these people to confess readily, and they wanted to get out of it. So guess what happens? And those of us that served in the service, we all were the beneficiaries of that, and that was the code of conduct. You give your name, rank, and serial number, and nothing else. All the information, but you wait a certain period of time, then you can tell them anything. Because, you know, the only thing you got to worry about is tactical information. You don't give them any time. And, of course, tactical information gets obsolete very fast. So finally, and then I've talked to Laird Gutterson and guys that were in Vietnam that really stood up to torture. But it's an interesting thing to see those men come back in the 50s, standing at a strange angle, behaving like these automatons. A very interesting thing that just isolation, deprivation, alienation can do to somebody. I suffer from it myself, being a writer, from sitting in front of that computer so many hours. You know, sometimes, you know, catch myself in the mirror staggering around. And as a result of that, you know, so give your name, rank, and serial. It's called the code of conduct. Now, out of this came the best psychological study that anybody's ever done on 3,000 men that were POWs in Korea. It's because they studied them all with a fine-tooth comb. Most interesting, they had three categories. They had the guys that collaborated outright with the enemies, the guys that resisted the enemy to the death, and the guys that just went along with the enemy. Well, the ones that just went along with the enemy were the same. They found out finally after this long, serious study. They just went along with the enemy. They were the same guys that just went along with our military. They were draftees, you know. The guys that collaborated with the enemy outright were the people in our own military that were known as gung-ho. And the people that resisted the enemy were the people that resisted our own military. And they wanted us all to resist the enemy the same way that those guys did. Now, so they studied those guys, the resistors, you know, they wanted us to be that way. And they found out that there was this spectrum of, at one hand, they were the criminals, and at the other hand, they were the highly creative. And then they began to study more, and they saw that criminality is nothing more than misplaced creativity. So we have an actual industry in this country of misplaced creativity. Brainwashing in Red China. Edward Hunter, the man that coined the term brainwashing, wrote a couple of books about it. And then came the fictional version of that story by Richard Condon, the Manchurian Candidate. And that caught everybody's attention. I knew Richard when he was alive. He was a PR flack that dropped out. He was 60 in full life, and then this was his first novel, and it was a big hit. And it was a story of a guy that was captured. That's Lawrence Harvey playing the assassin. I don't know if you can see that. Playing the assassin who was programmed unbeknownst. They captured him behind enemy lines, take him up to Manchuria. You can rent it in your video stores. Programmed him, then he came back to attempt to. He did assassinate the candidate for president, who happened to be a guy he didn't like anyway. It was his stepfather. So the Queen of Diamonds over the phone triggered the response. And it was true. And I asked Condon, first question, now that Condon can't defend himself, some guys are writing that Condon knew all about this MK, and I asked him about it. He loved my book back in 74. I think he saw a rough draft, and he said, he wrote great things about it. And he said, no, I just read Pavlov and Salter and invented the rest, you know, because it was pretty easy, pretty basic premise. Frank Sinatra was in the film. He's one of those guys that are being programmed in the scene from the movie. And it's an interesting movie to watch. And Sinatra owned a large piece of the film. And when Kennedy was assassinated, he pulled the film out of circulation. And it remained out of circulation for probably 15 years or so, which I thought was interesting. Maybe he knew something about the assassination of Kennedy that we don't know. These are some of the 1940 stills that I found of soldiers under hypnosis being marched around and, you know, demonstrating before others. And of course, we know that these common things now are, once this was, this in 1978, this was my show. I went all over the world. I had these slides and a few others. But this was shocking to people. They didn't know you could be made to do something against your will and without your knowledge. They didn't know you could control, do mind over matter kind of things with your body, control blisters and what have you. And I learned from Anthony Robbins when I saw 200 people walk over a bed of coals as long as this room. We were trying to do the Guinness Book of Records, you know. And 60% of the people got their feet burned. Well, they walked on mesquite, which had the hottest fire and had oil, and it stuck to the feet. But 60% got burned, 40% didn't. Now, you explain that to me. Andy Weil, the New Age healer, he's an MD, but he was there, but he wouldn't walk. He knew what a hot fire was. So scientists did it. So, oh, no, that's who got his thermometer on. But we know you can control blisters. And Kathy O'Brien tells an interesting story about being burned between her breasts by nitrous oxide and having a Baphomet, which is a demonic, like, star, goat-like figure that was used by the Knights Templar and has a whole history. But apparently Noriega was very superstitious, and she had a message, she claims, from high-ranking government, whether George Bush or whoever, to get his attention. Her handler gave her the cue phrase, and that Baphomet appears, which had been, she'd been burned with nitrogen or nitric acid, you know, while in a hypnotic state, but it would only come out during that state. So it was programmed things, and things can't, like that can be done and have been repeated in laboratory experiments. So, but in 1940, there they were doing that. And of course, this is just, I just threw this in as a filler, because what we're talking about is how to divide your mind. Now, Daddy, if Daddy hasn't already done it, the mind, I don't know what this guy said. He said it happens at an early age, it's got to be emotional. True, but he didn't say it's got to happen before you can speak. The real DID has to happen before you can talk. So that's a very early age, you know, probably a year around or before. And all of us that have had, that know a lot of MPD stories and everything, realize that there are personalities and different identities anchored to various body parts. I have a great video of the most wonderful little lady. She's on our website, Patty, and I've never seen anybody react like this lady. She's like a school. It's like a she herself is the schoolhouse, and she's full of children trying to burst out, and it's almost like her eyeballs move sideways, and one comes up and says, "Hey, what about me?" You know, and the next one, and she can't control this when she gets started. So I was trying to do an interview with her, and I said, "Let me anchor your executive personality, who's all, you know, she's a volunteer for certain police things, and she's a, you know, she's got her take charge personality, is very competent." So I wanted to anchor her in that. So I said, "Let me touch your knee, and every time, if you go off into another person, I'll touch your knee, you come back, this is your executive, right?" So I thought I had anchored it pretty good. Well, in the middle of the interview, she's this little kid again. So I touched her knee, and she says, "What do you think you're doing?" She says, "You're just touching my knee with your finger." She says, "They use the cattle prod, you know?" And then she looked at the camera, and I had, my girlfriend was the camera woman, Pat. Both of them were Pat, and they got along great. But she had this great big old studio video camera, you know. And she says, "You know, we did that before, but there was never a woman running the camera." She says, "We were making blue money." And I didn't know what blue money was, you know, which is child porn, as it turns out later. This is a doctor on the right, B.F. Skinner and Mrs. Skinner, and his daughter, their daughter, Debbie Skinner. Now, he was at Harvard. It's respectable. This is at the apex of science, this kind of research, you know. He used to work with a lot of pigeons and chimpanzees, but this is his daughter, Debbie, and of course the box, they said, kept Debbie from being disturbed, by, you know, awakened in her sleep, and they could carry on and live a regular lifestyle, and Debbie was protected from traffic outside, and it was air conditioned and everything, and Debbie looks pretty happy there. Remember that the beginning of, you heard a lot about Pavlov, and the Russians have always been big fans of our dark side of our science, and of course they love, I'll get to that in cybernetics, I'll get to Norbert Wiener in a little while, but they loved a guy named J.B. Watson, you know, who was the founder of behaviorism. Watson had an illegitimate child, little Albert, which I was surprised to learn that this was his child. And it was with the nurse who worked for him. But in those days, just because you had a child out of wedlock, you didn't tell anybody. So nobody ever, not many people knew. Well, Watson finally got defrocked, and he went to work for Madison Avenue. And he's the father of mind control in advertising. But the most interesting thing about Watson was here's his little baby crawling along, little Albert crawling along on the floor, and they want to condition Albert. So, and they had a little bunny rabbit, white bunny rabbit, and they let the bunny rabbit out of the cage. And as soon as the bunny rabbit would emerge, little Albert would say, "Ooh," and he'd go running for the bunny rabbit, or crawling toward the bunny. And he got to a certain proximity of the bunny rabbit, and Daddy would drop this big steel bar clanging behind little Albert that made him jump and cry naturally. And he did this repeatedly till little Albert was afraid of anything white, anything that moved that way, anything furry, you know, all of his life. Now, little Albert, the son of the founder of behaviorism, and little Debbie Skinner, the daughter of one of the leading proponents of behaviorism, and if you understand behaviorism, you know it works. It is a science, and it is uncanny. Both of them committed suicide in their 20s. So what does that say about one, their parents, and the heritage of this kind of approach to human, the study of human psychology, I guess it's called. So that's Debbie in the box. So Skinner was the apex of science, right, of American intellectual establishment, Harvard University. And this is the nadir of American intellectual the establishment. This is William Jennings Bryan III in L.A. He's the founder and director of the American Institute of Hypnosis. Right? Anybody heard of him? Yeah. He is shown there, that panel. He can run three hypnotic subjects at a time with that panel. They're hooked in the room, program three people. And when he died, I was trying to get an interview with him. He kept dodging me, as Martin Orne has succeeded doing once I got him on the golf course and almost had him cornered and ran away. But here this guy died on the stage of a heart attack in Las Vegas doing it. So he's a hypnotist and doing some explaining to police about hypnotism. But according to his widow, within hours of his passing, it was like magic. The signal was sent, and the CIA showed up in his private house. Not only they showed up in his office, but they showed up in his private home and removed every scrap of paper from his library. So there is reason to believe that he was, as is alleged, the programmer of perhaps Sirhan Bishara Sirhan, the assassin of Robert Kennedy, and maybe one of the programmers of Candy Jones, who was the number one pinup during World War II. I think she should be. That's Candy Jones. Betty Grable was the number one, and she was number two, or something like that. And she wrote her own book called The Control of Candy Jones, which some people would now try to deny that that was true, but indeed it runs true. She was programmed to commit suicide at a certain time by jumping off a cliff. Her husband she married a guy. I think the only reason she married him because he started loosening her programming. His name was Long John Neville. He was a talk show host in New York but he was an amateur hypnotist, and he started working with her. You know, and you can reintegrate just like that. Unbelievable. No matter, unless you're continually re-stimulated. You know, you have your natural tendencies to pull it all together again and reintegrate. But he was working with her, and suddenly she remembered, gee whiz, I went on all these trips in Southeast Asia. She remembered having her hand in a box with the scorpion stinging her and all kinds of other things. And being basically a pigeon, you know, a courier for the, what I call, cryptocracy, because we ran out of three-letter words, you know. There's just too many names to this thing. A secret government. And so she, whatever he did, shook loose the thing, and she didn't jump off the cliff, and she lived to tell about it. Another probable, and somebody should write a book and study Marilyn's life and time. She was an abused child, and you know how it goes. You're daddy is a pedophile, and daddy's making movies of abusing the kids in the neighborhood, and he ships them through the mail, and the postal inspector finds this and says, we're going to arrest these guys, and they give it to some federal branch of law enforcement because it's a federal crime, and that somehow gets triggered over and bumped over to the Department of Defense, and the Department of Defense guys, who are probably CIA or NSA or whatever, or NASA or something, they show up and say, you're going to jail for... Now, the guy's been arrested. He's been in jail, daddy, for a couple of years, maybe a couple of days. But they stressed him, and then these DOD guys show up and say, yeah, but you're going to jail for 25 years. We got you. Otherwise, you work for us. And then these guys go to work for them. So now we'll show you how to program it. So the whole family ends up and then the children of those children end up working for Uncle Cryptocracy for the rest of their lives. And you'll hear that story told over and over. I hope you hear Bryce Taylor's presentation. That's a lurid story about her. And the reason I know she's real is because I met her when she was with
the guard that she can't see anymore, you know.
So it's cut out. But I know who it was. You know, a movie star that was a handler, you know. So I met her then. That was years before I met her again in the mind control context. So I know that but I think she's totally sanitized her book, so it doesn't name any names. But it should. Operation Mind Control names the names. Because I got a permission to use an earlier version, and I changed her name, of course. So you have to put two and two together. But if you want the real story. Then, of course, you know, we got the doggone thing, but it says how to hypnotize, right? And it was in a comic book. So this is in the 40s or 50s, and it was a big thing. You know, everybody was hypnotizing everybody. And little did they know, you know, just accidentally you can really send somebody on a spin and really have some problems. I hope you don't think I mean to use the word spin deliberately. Because that's Kathy O'Brien. I'm sure many of you know her and have heard her story. It's written in the book Transformations in America. She brought the term presidential model to the fore, and she presents kind of a National Enquirer version of the MKUltra story, naming names, sexual preferences, perversions, dimensions, and identifying marks of the genitalia of the high government officials. And that's probably her main defense. I mean, she says, okay, you know, remember Michael Jackson, they had him drop his drawers, and they, you know, because the kids identify. Well, she says that about some of the major presidents and secretaries of defense and what have you, which I think is a great thing to do. Oh, doggone. You can't see that. Take a hammer to that. Well, can anybody read that? Military, what? Controls my mind, this woman says. So, she calls it monarch there, mind control subject, and that's the picture of, you know, I mean, in proportion to four columns of newspaper, it was a little picture about this big, you know, you couldn't see what it was. So it gives the name of her shrink there, and I called up the shrink and I said, boy, can you tell me or can you put me in touch with this lady? And she called me then, this lady, and I use a pseudonym in the book. She then sent me a blow-up of the picture that she didn't even know was there because she'd given, it was on her passport, and she gave it to the reporter. The reporter spilled coffee on it. Oops! But they had a negative of the picture. So the reporter blew the picture up and sent it back to her, and she was surprised to find these two images on it. One is the famous butterfly connoting that she was a sexual slave program. And the rose is the assassin program. Now, we find in Operation Mind Control is a pin for evening wear. You know, you wore the butterfly pin or the rose pin. Some on a lower level, they would actually tattoo the women in certain places. A cattle prod, 200,000 volts DC, will give you a melanin, give you a nice little mole, you know. So some of them are burned in a certain, you know, with moles in a certain shape on the face. And you meet many survivors that have had every mole taken off of their body just for that reason, because they knew that this is identifying. And any of the perpetrators that know the programming can access the person depending on what pin they're wearing or what they know about the programming. And of course, it's a, I mean, the history of mind control is the history of a male chauvinist secret organization at work, preying upon women. But there are some other things. Women are uniquely susceptible to trauma, and especially sexual trauma. And then the reactions, the difference between men and women in the MPD thing, which it all, this kind of mind control all falls into the MPD. It's just a naturally occurring phenomenon that probably happened in nature. I mean, if you go up to a victim in a car crash and they're in a state, it's called shock, right? You're in this. If you go up to that victim in a car crash in a state of shock and give them your card and say, "You'll send me $1,000 tomorrow. Come over here, sit down. Are you okay? You know, change the subject." Probably that person will give you $1,000 the next day because they're in a shock, state of shock. And if you know how to give an embedded command in a positively framed way, people want. It's just the way people are. We are all that way. Nothing special about it. So that state that was then is used to traumatize small children, a naturally occurring state, is accessed by the government. When you go into, my cousin was the reason I got into this. He was traumatized, so we didn't know it. He had a drunken father that used to beat him and the mother up, and that wasn't any big deal. There was no big deal. But when he joined the service, it showed up on the test. There he was. Ah, this is a person with tendency to, high tendency to dissociate. We can use him. He was trained, and he was a courier to carry secret messages locked behind post-hypnotic amnesia blocks. And today he's still having trouble. He can't sleep very well, and so many years later, and he's had 13 years of therapies and hypnosis and all kinds of stuff, and it's pretty well in there. He remembers a lot of the atrocities he had to witness of interrogations, which ended with decapitation and things like that, you know, just really hideous stuff, military stuff. So she was, that little lady was used in, she was a bomber by the time she was age 3. She was like a setup person that would hang out with the assassin and distract somebody while a guy bumped him, or she would, just an innocent little kid coming into a place like this, tripping down, oh, a little package, and puts it down and goes somewhere, and later the place blows up, you know, that kind of thing. And she's pretty much recovered, doing very well, I'm happy to say. And the best literature, and I've got several examples of it, the best literature on mind control and survivors is self-published literature. I mean, the publishing companies won't touch this stuff anymore. I got it. The only reason I got Operation Mind Control published in 1978 was my agent was an agent. He belonged to Naval Intelligence, and he was one of the biggest agents. He's now one of the biggest agents in New York. And he paid me a whopping advance because they wanted to control it. And then, man, they printed 1 million copies and ate it and paid me full royalties, and you never found it again. In 2 weeks, it was gone. You couldn't get it. Now they're paying $650 a copy for a, if you get a used copy of Operation Mind Control, sell it. So, I don't know, because now you can get one for free by becoming a member, you know, self-published edition from the Freedom of Thought Foundation. Greatly expanded. This was one of the early things of the male chauvinist society. It was called The Battle for Men's Mind, early book by William Sargent. And here's Dr. Sidney Gottlieb of the CIA. He was that guy that gave 147 different drugs to people. John Marks in The Search of the Manchurian Candidate, or the Church Committee reports, cover him pretty well. But he's a scientist. He's a doctor. He's respectable. And of course, we know about Timothy Leary, who was a psychologist. He's the producer of the Flower Generation, the psychedelic 60s, and the slogan "Turn on, tune in, drop out." Leary worked with Henry Luce and the CIA to turn on the generation known as the baby boomers. When I asked Leary if he was witting or unwitting when he got his LSD from the CIA, he said, "Who would you work for? The Yankees or the Dodgers? You want me to work for the KGB?" This is a blank slide in memory. I had one, a picture of Dr. Frank Olson, who flew, jumped, or otherwise exited from the 16th floor of the Pennsylvania Hotel in New York City back in the 50s. And it was believed, and Olson's family was paid $750,000 wrongful death, you know, the Federal Torts Claim Act keeps you from suing the government for wrongful death. But it turns out, after the autopsy, the family exhumed the body of Olson. I'm sure some of you know this. His skull was fractured before he was thrown out the window. He was killed before he was thrown out the window. They probably just laced him with LSD. Now, he was an Edgewood Arsenal chemist, and he had qualms about dosing people against their will and without their knowledge at Edgewood, and he objected, so they killed him and threw him out the window and made it look like a suicide. Okay, and now the family is suing under a different law, and maybe they'll get some real money out of this, because it was, these guys should all be, I mean, the culprits should be prosecuted, but we can't prosecute anybody until we. What are we going to do? Are we going to repeal the National Security Act and then give everybody amnesty? Man, there's a lot of criminals. There's a lot of murderers. All right, so this is Harold Blauer. I used to make a joke and say, on his ass before the government put him there forever. He was a tennis pro. He was given an overdose of a mescaline derivative by the CIA. Every minute of his death is chronicled in cold blood descriptions in their classified files. You can find it in quoted verbatim in Operation Mind Control. Like Olson's family, the survivors of Blauer were also paid a $250,000 by Uncle Sam. But they're suing again because he was a private citizen. He didn't sign up. Now, you get the idea, right? If you sign up for the government, you're going to give your life for the country, right? The National Security Act suspends all your civil rights. You get it? After you've given your life for the country, since they didn't need it and you survived, they're going to use anything they got, your body parts, your mind, your soul, anything. That's the way the game is played. Most of the victims of mind control are government-related, maybe second or third generation. Our files contained the very detailed debriefings, drawings, sketches of like high-ranking CIA officials' daughters. Now, why would they do that to this person that's now a very competent secretary, who, you know, and is being harassed and tortured for like since he was a small child, you know, by some incredible technology that is more advanced. So she is not one of the DID kind. This is unbelievable. But of course, Walter Reed is a place where they program people. And here's one. This story, I just got this recently from Blanche, I think. Sang a song to Jenny, next incredible true account of the secret U.S. raid into China. In 1978, I'm in San Francisco doing a talk show for KPIX-TV. Normally, they bus in women's clubs, and there I was. The bus broke down, and I'm left with nothing but the phone lines, which was fortuitous because a commander in the Navy called and said, I was on the black pajama team working behind, and they sent us to Walter Reed, and now we all have cardboard memories. And this is the story of one guy, not the same guy, I think, that I talked to. But this is probably the same story of mind-controlled soldiers operating behind enemy lines.
We've been listening to a presentation by Walter Boert entitled The Secret History of Mind Control. This was given this past October in Atlanta at the Ritual Trauma, Child Abuse, and Mind Control Conference. Walter is the author of Operation Mind Control and is the director of the Freedom of Thought Foundation. He has talked in this presentation about the history of mind control techniques and the individuals and institutions that were involved in developing mind control. Stay tuned for next week for part two of this presentation. You're listening to CKLN 88.1. Now stay tuned for Keen Western America coming up next. Thank you.